All right, while we get set up here, I want to go ahead and welcome Floris. Floris is a software engineer at Number Zero and a mountain climber. He's going to go ahead and talk about an introduction to Iroh. Iroh is a Rust library that simplifies P2P networking by establishing direct QUIC connections, or quick connections, allowing developers to easily build custom decentralized protocols. All right, with that, I'll go ahead and hand over to Floris. Let's give it up for Floris.
Thank you. I'm Floris, and I work at Number Zero, where we are working on Iroh. Iroh is basically like what we want to make is like we want to create. It's a library to make PHP connections, essentially. We just want a connection. Like we concentrate basically on the very basics of like you have two endpoints and a connection between that. But where at all possible, like we want to be PHP, so every endpoint can accept incoming connections, regardless of like where you are located on the network, and that's kind of the core of what Iroh tries to do. We use Qwik because Qwik is like fits very well for this, and the endpoints we identify by this public key pair, essentially. And this means that the public key pair is actually the thing that you dial. So you kind of have this notion of like dial by endpoint ID. And that's basically the idea is that like this is like the core of like PHP networking. And then on top of that, you can build other application protocols, etc. So this is sort of the typical setup from that you get in the internet. Like you have two devices behind home networks. Both of these, and generally these are sort of behind NAT devices, NAT routers, which means you can't actually make a direct connection to the other end. Even if you have like IPv6 connection, NAT may not be happening, but you will probably still have a firewall in between there. So this doesn't really change that much to it. So what happens generally is that, you know, if you have two applications that want to talk to each other, you end up with a server somewhere in a data center. And apparently there's only one data center in the world, so everyone fails at the same time. This centralization is kind of bad. And it's like ends up with a with too much failure, and also like the server ends up knowing much more than it needs to generally, and we would like really be able to for the endpoint devices to be able to have control themselves and really to have more like more user agency in that. So instead, like what to make this to make this possible, we kind of go to like the the Iroh library essentially like manages like how to create direct connections, and for that you need hole punching. Now you see that we still have a relay server. So how much better is this really if we still have a server? Unfortunately, that is kind of the reality of the internet. You cannot like make direct connection without having some sort of server. Like the problem is that you have like you need a public IP like. On the client side, you will always have to dial out, and you need to have some public IP address. The reason we actually like make this work is that we try to make this relay server do as little as possible. So the trade-offs we sort of make is that we really want these connections to be reliable. Like if your connection is not, like if you can't always establish your connection, then you're just not going to use it, and you're going to go back to the centralized version, right? So That's why we have this like as an absolute fallback. There is a transport that goes via the relay server. The relay server is also like, and the other thing is like when you connect your connections, if it takes like a long time, if it takes like 5 seconds to establish, that's also not very good. So like right at the beginning of the connection, we will immediately start sending traffic through the relay server, and then that traffic will help with the hole punching, and then hopefully you get a direct connection which will have much lower latencies, etc. What you can't really see on this picture is that the relay server doesn't, like, it's not like one server. Like everyone can host their own server. It's kind of much, you can think more of it as a federated network of relay servers, really. You can host your own server. You don't even need to know. Eventually, when you need to connect to another endpoint, you need to know what relay server they are using, but they could be using a completely different set of relay servers than you are. Like, we'll talk in a minute about how you find out where you can locate another endpoint. And the relay server is also, like, very blind. It doesn't know anything. Like, it doesn't store anything, and it just sees encrypted data going from one node to another node. So it has, like, the very minimal kind of information that it has. So how does hole punching kind of work with this is that so the last thing about, like, before going there is, like, the relay server also, like, has this, you see here that it's like an HTTPS connection. This is sort of like, the idea of this is that, like, this is the connection that, like, is the most likely to work on the internet, regardless of how restricted kind of environment you are in. We do on that a WebSocket upgrade. This is also, like, even if you have, like, very restrictive environments that do, like, machine-in-the-middle kind of certificate connection hijacking to apparently security reasons, but whatever. They are more likely to let through a WebSocket upgrade than something else, than a custom upgrade. And then once we have the WebSocket connection, we can basically, what we do is we put UDP packets that we would normally send over directly the internet. We put those inside that tunnel. And the relay, the only thing the relay server does is, like, it gets a packet, it sees what endpoint it is for, and then then the only thing it can go is, like, well, do I have that endpoint ID connected to me? If so, then put it over there. If you don't, then just drop it on the floor. And that's the only thing the relay can do. So that's the only kind of knowledge a relay server has. To actually do hole punching with this is, like, you start the way this works in Iro is that you start the connection via the relay server, and then you have to exchange, like, information about how to establish a direct connection. And basically, you give, like, candidate IP addresses to each other. So in this case, you have, like, the two external IP addresses that you would share. Now, when you do this, you don't actually really know if you're even on the same network. Like, you could actually be local on the network. So you actually just share all your IP addresses to the other side. You send those via the relay connection. And then once you both have the other kind of connections, what you do is you send packets to each other, to all of those addresses at the same time. And normally your router, firewalls, NAT devices, whatever, will see that the outgoing packets go out at the same time, and then they cross over somewhere on the internet. And then when the packet comes back, when the other packet arrives, hopefully the router will kind of recognize this as being a incoming packet from the same connection, and that is kind of the basics of, like, how you do hole punching, essentially. So Iro manages basically this. Here there's only, like, two paths. When you do it in practice, you will get more paths than this, probably. Like, a lot of times we now have IPv4 and IPv6 direct paths. We might get both of them. You could get even several. And Iro tries to keep all of those connections and, like, selects the best one out of it that works. And it's as soon as the connection is established and as soon as, like, hole punching happens, the relay connection will, the relay path will kind of go quiet and not have any traffic. So, and the relay server doesn't even, because it is completely blind, it doesn't even know that hole punching was even attempted or succeeded or anything. All it knows is that sometimes there's a bit of traffic, sometimes there's not. So you still have to find out where your other endpoint is, like, because we dial by endpoint ID, which is kind of the public key of your cryptographic key pair. And for that, we have to have Yeah, for that we have to like we have a system basically, which is currently called, well, we just renamed that actually in the last release. It's now called Address Lookup. And the basic idea is that you map your endpoint ID that you have, and you want to find out like where may I find this? Where may I find this node? Like maybe it's on a relay URL, which is kind of the typical scenario that I just kind of described. But it could also be like you could be on a local network somewhere with no access to a relay server. That's high cutoff. So you could also resolve into IP addresses directly, etc. And this kind of is modeled and on like DNS resolution, like DNS lookups, which is kind of very similar, where you have like a name and then you need to find some IP addresses. And this is also like how you find like the relay server of the other endpoint without having it configured or needing to have to not know it ahead of time. The nice thing about this is that this is like completely extensible. So you can like, depending on the application, you can extend and add your own address lookup. For example, like the gossip protocol that I will quickly mention at the end as well. That has its own, or adds its own mechanism to this, because it kind of already can find out information about other endpoints out of band of so it can already provide this. The most common one that we kind of recommend to start with is actually literally DNS. There is a very nice system, PKIR, and what this actually does is like it's a very small and neat standard. It's not like that essentially is a mechanism to like publish some information that is like signed by a public key or a key pair. And like this essentially there is like we have basically and you can again this is like you can run your own DNS server for this, but we have a DNS server running that basically at a subdomain, you can basically ask for like, this is the ID I'm looking for, and you get back a DNS record. This DNS record is kind of signed by the key itself. So the server, like to submit this, you have to publish this to an HTTP server essentially. But this server will only accept these records like if the signature actually is valid. And actually when you look up, you also have this kind of system. DNS is kind of nice because it's like, how a lot of the internet is worked for this, you get all the caching, et cetera, going on in there. So it's like a very nice way. And DNS is like another very popular way. It's like local network only. You basically broadcast to like the local network saying like, can I find, is this node ID here or something? The MDNS one is kind of funny because it does something extra that's not part of address lookup. Because like if you're familiar with MDNS, a lot of people actually expect to just like magically know what other devices are in the local network. And MDNS does this by basically broadcasting every so often, hey, I'm here, I have this service kind of thing. If you use the MDNS address lookup, you have this a little bit of extra information that you can use as well. The same PKIR system that kind of allows you to publish DNS records into a DNS system actually allows you to publish it directly into a DHT as well. Like the BitTorrent mainline DHT is kind of the DHT that has been around for a long time and survives a lot of attacks, etc. to it. So it's like a very reliable DHT. And the nice thing about PKIR is that it can publish directly onto a DHT. So if you don't want to have any central services, etc. involved, this kind of also shows that this is possible depending on your choices, right? And you're free to, you can make more of these. I'll go very quickly through, basically once you have a connection, right, so you have, we basically provide a quick connection between two endpoints, and that's it. Then it's up to the application to kind of decide what to do. Quick is kind of very nice for this because it is built on top of UDP, which is which is very nice for hole punching, etc. So it was kind of nice for us, but it provides also nice kind of familiar interfaces to the application developers. So basically, you get like streams, which is like ordered data, like you get a TCP one. The stream, you get more than one stream though, like in TCP you only get one. And the nice thing about like if you know about HTTP2, there you also have like multiple streams, but you kind of have head of line blocking where if you lose some packets in one stream, all the streams are blocked. In Qwik doesn't have that problem anymore. You also, there's a datagrams extension, and these two together means that like if you have an application protocol already that's like on TCP or UDP, you can just port them and like use Qwik very naively. Qwik has other nice improvements though, like especially the connection handshake is like much faster. If you do a connection handshake in like TCP and TLS, you get like three round trips to between the two endpoints before you can start sending data to application data to the other endpoint. In Qwik, the normal handshake, the long handshake, kind of is just one round trip. Like Qwik manages to combine the TLS setup and the connection handshake in together, and like you just send one packet to the remote, you get one response back, and then you can send application data. Once you have like managed to have a connection and you reconnect to the same endpoint again, you can even use zero RTT, which basically means that you can put the user data, application data directly in the first packet. Under the hood, like there's various other things, like the loss detection congestion control is very nice. It's always encrypted, and also like it's always encrypted is kind of so TLS is like mandatory. And everything is like encrypted on the packets, like so everything on the wire, like there's like just a few bits in the header basically that are not encrypted. Everything else, like including the header, including the all the connection metadata is fully encrypted. The purpose of this is partially just to make everything look like the same, like you cannot tell anything. TCP is like very ossified in a way, it's very difficult to evolve. The hope is that this will stop middle boxes from being relying on particular properties of Qwik. But also, the other nice thing is like everything looks like HTTP3, essentially. So the more we get HTTP adoption, the more everything just looks like the same datagrams, random UDP packets flying around, which is kind of like a nice thing we're aiming for. Once you have your Qwik connection, basically, Iro kind of gives you like wants to provide you like the modular protocols. Kind of, it doesn't force you like to use just one application protocol. Like we provide like we kind of try and make it easy enough to like use multiple protocols, so you can establish multiple connections, and each endpoint can like implement various protocols. I will quickly talk about like two of these protocols that we ourselves built that are kind of generic building blocks. You're not limited to any of these, but yeah, Blobs is sort of the protocol that we have for requesting. This is kind of verified streaming. So the idea is that you get your if you fetch a file or something, you want to download something, that as data comes in, you continuously know that this is like the correct data that comes in. And gossip is kind of this way of like creating a swarm, and like without having to have a direct connection to every member in the swarm, you can like send small messages to the entire swarm. So very quickly kind of going through these, it's kind of neat protocols, I guess. Blobs is kind of built on top of Blake 3, which is a modern and fast hashing algorithm. And Blake 3, basically it uses the internal structure of Blake 3 to enable this. So what Blake 3 does is like you partition the file into like 1 kilobyte blocks. And each block gets then hashed. The reason that this makes Blake 3 really good for optimizing, because you can basically do this in parallel with SIMD instructions, etc. And then once you have all those hashes, you can start like combining, like you hash basically two of these hashes together, and that make up the next layer of hashes. And you keep building up these hashes all into a Merkle tree, essentially, all the way until you have a root hash. Now, once you have like you have managed to build this all the way up to the root hash, to do sort of verified streaming, what you have to do is you have to traverse the hash from essentially the top to the bottom and the left to the right. So you start with the top one, and then you go you send those two hashes. You can check those two hashes and that make up that they still make up the root hash. Then you basically keep doing that. And you keep going, you go to the left, you send those two hashes. And then at the end, you end up at the bottom left and you actually send a file chunk. You've sent very little data now, but you already know that everything that you have sent, at any point you receive something, you know that is valid data. You can go through the line, to the whole file, or you can do also, it's really neat to do ranges as well. So you don't have to like build the entire tree. You can like go through them. And this kind of shows the order in which you would send kind of these chunks, and you would always kind of be able to verify data. This means you can like, fetch files with different chunks from different endpoints, etc., which is kind of very neat. Very quickly, I think we probably have a minute left, do we? Something, one, okay. gossip. The gossip is kind of like, it's a implementation. There are many gossip implementations with different trade-offs. This one is sort of based on specs written by the Willow folks. And it's very efficient at like distributing meshes to a dynamic gossip cluster, I guess, or number of endpoints. But it's not necessarily the most like attack-resistant one. If you have malicious nodes and part of that, you might want to reconsider this. Very high view kind of is like it's built on like two separate systems. One is like where you have like a handful of like neighbors which are just randomly chosen essentially, and whenever you have a message, you send it to all of those. But that doesn't scale up. So like if you do that to the whole swarm, that you get a lot of duplicate messages being sent around. But the active neighbors allow you to find quickly, like become member of the group. The passive neighbors are sort of like, in case you lose some active neighbors, you immediately have other ones you can replace this. And if you have too many neighbors, they get handed off to another node and that kind of thing. And then on top of that, the plum tree part is like building a spanning tree. And that's actually what you then, you kind of continuously make sure that there is a single tree of like where a message can be passed through to be delivered to every member in the gossip swarm. You have to continuously prune and repair links in this tree, etc. That was very, very fast. Hopefully it gives you an idea of like what I would say.
Thank you, Forrest. We appreciate you coming out here.